I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast, Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. Doc says. Hello and welcome to the Doc Says here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania Era book series and of the Doctor's Orders on lordsofpain.net for so many years. Oh man, today, interesting topic in my opinion because we're going to dive into WrestleMania, which is something I used to absolutely love to do, ladies and gentlemen. I remember going back years ago, LOP Columns Forum, back in the days where we didn't have Twitter, we had forums, and we would share our thoughts in long form. That's what sparked my ability to write, period, and that's what sparked my ability to write columns about wrestling, for sure, which I did, I did that at a high level for a long time. And that was what's, you know, sort of created the desire to write my WrestleMania books, is to try to put things in historical context, like I had done in more random fashion in the forums and things of that nature, and that I eventually did in far more, you know, thought-out ways when writing columns, and it spurned those books. But I'll be honest with you, folks, the passion to do all that, it came from WrestleMania. Year in and year out for the longest time. And I say this, you know, we've been waxing philosophic here over the last couple of years on this show, and particularly as it comes to WWE, because I've had so many problems with it. And, you know, those of you who are newer to the podcast this year that started listening when the show moved over to the Chairshot Network, I mean, that was pretty much, you could bank on those several years that passion was going to be personified through the Doc Chad Matthews come WrestleMania time. And I think the primary catalyst for that was this way that WrestleMania was presented for so many years, not just as the biggest show of the year, but one where legendary matches took place, ones that defined our fandoms for a lot of us. The Rock versus John Cena from this decade that I talked about on the more recent episode, on one of the episodes this year that was within the framework of the Decade in Review series about WWE. And then I'm sure if you really paid attention to my tone, then you could really get the sense of what Rock versus Cena meant to me as someone who grew up sort of putting on a pedestal matches that took place on the grandest stage. WrestleMania is not really that anymore. It's still the biggest show of the year. It's all about spectacle, but it became about philosophical themes such as more is more. It concerned itself with trying to create so many WrestleMania moments that I think it left on the cutting room floor, unfortunately, the types of matches that were the biggest catalyst for those WrestleMania moments throughout history, through the first 31 years of WrestleMania history in particular. So we're going to talk today about WrestleMania. And I will say this, I mean, the passion for WrestleMania that I developed, it wasn't so much a childhood attachment. My childhood attachment was to wrestling itself, was to watching Monday Night Raw during the Monday Night Wars, was to watch Raw in its infancy, but before that to watch videotape after videotape that I picked up at Blockbuster stores back in the day, the late 80s and early 90s, just watching all the big shows that WWE put on. And that's where I developed my attachment to wrestlers like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, Macho Man Randy Savage, The Ultimate Warrior, etc. But when I became an adult fan, then I've said on this podcast many times years ago that part of the biggest thing that made my transition from A child enamored with wrestling to an adult who loves the art of wrestling was The Rock versus Hollywood Hulk Hogan. And that wasn't a moment. It had a WrestleMania moment within it, but that was a legendary match between two guys who really couldn't have met by any other means but perfect sets of circumstances, and it be that big of a spectacle. But that's there's a big difference between something like that and a match between legends who have already faced each other years ago, neither of them in their primes, neither of them in their peak, not an organic set of circumstances that feels like fate was intervening, but just a Triple H calls up, Batista calls up Vince McMahon and says, I want to have a match with Triple H and I'll retire. And Vince McMahon says, sure, after 5 years straight of saying no, apparently, or whatever the hell it was. I mean, come on, that's not the same thing. And to pretend it's the same thing is to really eliminate what made WrestleMania special for such a long time. Because the biggest matches, and often the greatest matches, there's a difference. Andre versus Hogan was a big match. Rock versus Cena was a great match. One drew tons of money. The other not only drew tons of money, but was absolutely fantastic as well. That's what WrestleMania is about. WrestleMania is about putting matches like that against each other, celebrating the memories of them individually. That is what I really came to love about wrestling as an adult, is when I watch Rock versus Hogan, you can bet your butt the next year after Y2J versus HBK tore down the house in Seattle that I wasn't comparing those two matches like I would two great movies, because that's greatness. Both of those matches represent greatness. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that 2019 didn't produce a WrestleMania match with a great WrestleMania moment that isn't fit for the ages. Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan was that, and it's going to get its due credit on today's podcast, because that would have been a foundational match at any WrestleMania in the modern era, because it was that important and it meant that much. So yeah, WrestleMania these last several years is not void of iconic moments. The triple threat at WrestleMania 32 for the World Women's WWE Championship, Charlotte Flair, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch. There's not three bigger female names in the industry over the last 35 years, ladies and gentlemen, than those three. Not three bigger, three in their ballpark, sure, but no three bigger. That was an iconic match that produced an iconic moment. So WrestleMania in its modern form is not void of great matches. It is not void of the kind of things that happened at WrestleMania's past that I wish we would see more of and more consistently. But I do think, as someone who has studied WrestleMania year in and year out, I do think, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that WrestleMania has lost its way. And Dakota Ibushi, one of the folks that I've more recently started to converse with on Twitter, good follow, by the way. Good conversations have come from that Twitter relationship. The recommendation came from Dakota Ibushi to myself and the guy who was on here with me a couple of weeks ago, Sir Sam, my pal from Down Under. Bad impression. My apologies, Sir Sam. And it was presented to us, the idea of to go back and rebook WrestleMania's 32 through 35 in an effort to prove that they could have been better and to do so in logical fashion. We're not going to go here, and it's going to be just me. Sir Sam and I tried to work it out to where him and I could do this podcast together, but it's just going to be me. This one I thought I would enjoy doing solo, just getting into the groove with it, diving deep into it, doing a little fantasy booking, which is something I so enjoyed back in the forum days, and really just deep dive it for a little while. And I hope you'll enjoy it, and I hope I can hold your attention even though we're talking about the past again. And I know from future experience, I know from a lot of past experience that the bottom line is people really enjoy when we podcasters talk about things that are happening in the present. And that's respectable, and I certainly appreciate that. But you know me. I mean, I've long been someone who enjoys looking at various angles of the past. But I hope I can hold your attention, because I really think that these WrestleMania cards that I've come up with are realistic as can be. Now, they are going to feature certain themes. And I'd like you to be prepared for that, because these themes, they are going to dominate card creation. Theme number one, building off of last week's discussion, we're not going to put every part-timer under the sun on these cards. These legendary figures are not going to be put on this card just because we need legendary figures on this card, or so the thought process goes. We're going to feature them, of course, because WrestleMania 28, WrestleMania 30, WrestleMania 31, these are shows, WrestleMania 27 as well, even to a lesser extent, and mainly to a lesser extent because it wasn't as successful at it. We're going to put part-timers on these cards. We're going to put legendary figures on these cards, but there's going to be a very good balance, and we're going to tip the scales toward this extremely talented modern generation of wrestlers. We're going to also, in creating these cards, make an assumption that with a bit more focus and consistent attention on the modern era, these matches, modern era creatively, I should be specific, these matches will be realistic examples of what could have been if WWE was firing on its typical classic creative cylinders as it pertains to the generation that we are currently seeing, the generation of talent, the Kevin Owens, the Seth Rollins, the Roman Reigns, the formerly known as Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles, the women's division, Asuka, Charlotte, Becky, etc. We're going to put all of them into this mix prominently, and we're going to make an assumption that creative in WWE during the rest of the calendar was no worse than it was in circa 2015, no worse than it was circa 2013, when you didn't see a total lack of effort. They were trying to get new stars over. They were concerned about making sure that people were positively paying attention to their product, even if one or two of their choices were construed as somewhat antagonistic toward the vocal wrestling audience. These are the concessions that we're making. No more than three part-time talents on the same show. No more. At least not in a match. So we're going to start with WrestleMania 32. And by the way, I'm not going to put every championship on here. I'm not going to put the tag team titles on here just for the sake of having them on there, because philosophically I believe tag team wrestling should play a greater role. No, this is going to try to stick to the confines of what was realistic and possible for the WWE at that time, based on booking patterns leading up to and following these WrestleManias. So WrestleMania 32, excuse me, Dallas, Texas. I'm in attendance, got my stepdad next to me, we're having a blast, met some great people that I'd known for a long time online that weekend, had a great time. WrestleMania 32, biggest crowd ever, 101,000 is what they reported. I wouldn't doubt it. I was in the building. There was not a seat to be had in that place, and to their credit for that. But we're going to open that show with a match that littered pay-per-views for the next several months. There was a great feud there going back to NXT. The Intercontinental Championship would be on the line in this scenario, because the Intercontinental Championship had already begun its renaissance under the very nice guidance of one Kevin Owens, and also of Dean Ambrose. We're going to play out the scenario that finds Kevin Owens as the Intercontinental Champion at WrestleMania 32. And we're going to put him up against Sami Zayn. They're going to continue the feud that they so successfully produced on NXT television before both of them entered career-altering spaces in their... And we're going to say that these guys are going to get a WrestleMania spotlight comparable to the spotlight placed on the ladder match that instead opened the show and found Zack Ryder winning the title. Now, that was a very enjoyable ladder match, but you may recall there were a lot of random people who had not been on any sort of significant television time in a long time, which brings me to another concession we're making, which is this is not an exercise in getting everybody a payday. The people who want to have, I mean, the people that they're going to have get on there, get out in front of those people just to get the WrestleMania payday, all of them are on the pre-show. The pre-show is 2 freaking hours long. It is not unrealistic to put a big battle royal together for both, let all them do their thing, and keep the main card tight and confined to a reasonable runtime that features the stuff that everybody really came to see. Pre-shows were always around before. Crowds didn't get burned out during pre-shows. You want to know why? Because the main show was confined to a certain period of time and featured stuff that people generally had come to care about across various parts of the card. Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, giving them 13 minutes to have a match like they had in an even shorter period of time. I think it was at Extreme Rules or Payback. Payback's the match. They had an amazing match at Payback, no longer than 12 minutes long. Same thing here for the Intercontinental Championship, and guess what happens? You've taken something that quite literally happened a couple of months prior, and you've used it to kick off WrestleMania with a story behind it, and odds are the same match on the WrestleMania stage with that kind of history behind it. You know what we're talking about that like? We're talking about that as one of the greatest Intercontinental Championship matches ever. We're talking about it as one of the sleeper hits for best opening WrestleMania match ever. It's gold. Now, that's a hot match. You start the night off hot. What do you come up with just next? I'm saying the New Day match, the exact same as it was against the League of Nations. Same presentation with the cereal box, which sold like gangbusters, even though it had a t-shirt in it, at WrestleMania weekend. The only thing different is that you put them over. You know, there is no stunner that makes Steve Austin look good at the expense of the New Day. There's none of that. The New Day, the celebration with the legends, it all happens. They beat up the League of Nations, which disbands the next night on Raw, never to be seen again. And there you have it. A great New Day presentation that sets them up as stars for future WrestleManias. The next match. Chris Jericho is not facing AJ Styles. He's not. You know who he's facing instead? He's facing The Miz for the United States Championship. It's a match between mouths. The Miz at that time was starting to round into form. You already were going to be pushing him later in the year, not just because of the Daniel Bryan Talking Smack segment, but because he was doing such good work already in the mid-card. He had made himself relevant. It was his time to shine again. The Miz began to do just that throughout that period of time. Maryse, I would have brought her back in the build-up to that feud, in the build-up to that match at WrestleMania, and odds are it's probably not that great. But not every match has to steal the show or have a shot at being match of the night. Some matches are just there to help make the show, not steal the show. And Jericho versus The Miz for the U.S. title is just that. After that, you had this advertised appearance by The Rock. The Rock comes back, and this is a year after the interaction that he had with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. We're going to put that segment on right there, but I'm going to come back to that because it's actually going to play a role in the main event that night. And so then we're going to move into Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar as originally planned. The Wyatt family is going to be involved. There's going to be a lot of prominent interaction because I believe Bray Wyatt was injured in the build-up to that year's WrestleMania, and partly he did not have a match because of some sort of injury. I think that there was some element of that there in play. But even still, the Wyatt family would factor prominently in because Brock Lesnar is still on a hot streak. He has come off the feud with The Undertaker the previous fall. He's still hot. There's still a lot of ways you can use him. He hasn't fallen into the traps that made him so unpopular later in 2016. And in my view, and in my line of thinking, he never does, because WWE isn't going to make the same kinds of decisions that they made the past few years in these scenarios. It's realistic. Rewriting history, yes, but it's realistic. Lesnar Wyatt happens, there's a tease for Strowman because Strowman and Lesnar are going to face each other at the following year's WrestleMania. After that, the same exact women's championship match happens. It's a little bit, it's higher up the card. It's the third to last match. It's presented, rightfully so, as the triple main event. That's what it is. Same women's match exactly. Same presentation to a T because let's face it, when we look back at this decade and we look at matches that help define certain parts of the product that are so prominent now, this match has to be in the conversation for amongst the most important. Because yes, there were great women's matches in NXT prior to this match, but this was the match that set the tone for what the women's division was going to be expected to produce moving forward. This was the match in WWE that matched what NXT's four horse women way, the one between Flair, Banks, Bayley, and Becky Lynch. So this triple threat match stays the same. Undertaker, great shape, ready to go, originally going to face John Cena. John Cena still injured in the lead up to WrestleMania 32 and is not ready for his comeback. So like Seth Rollins as well, we're not going to rush them back. We're going to keep them off the card because we don't need them this year. We've got plenty of depth on this roster to deal with injuries that are not yet fully healed. No reason to risk long-term health and long-term injury when we've got this kind of depth. So what do we do with Undertaker? We don't bring back Shane McMahon to face The Undertaker. Nobody in their right mind had ever said in their lives, you know what I'd like to see at WrestleMania? A 30-minute Hell in a Cell match between The Undertaker and Shane McMahon. So no, we're not going to do that. Instead, we've just signed a free agent who's going to come to mean a whole hell of a lot. He's going to come to mean so much to the WWE product in the 3 years that followed. His name is AJ Styles. He debuted to glorious acclaim in the Royal Rumble a couple of months prior. He's looking for a platform to showcase himself. He's already defeated Chris Jericho. He's already defeated Chris Jericho, who by the decade's end would be referred to by some as one of the 5 or 10 greatest wrestlers ever. Still interesting to talk about, by the way, and something we're going to talk about in the next couple of weeks with Rich Latta. So here we are. It's AJ Styles versus The Undertaker. And why? Because The Undertaker wants to have a great match. In his mind, the match with John Cena was going to be his swan song. He's not told anybody that it's necessarily going to be it, but it seems like the right time. It seems like the right place. It had seemed like the right time and right place for years. And when they announced Jerry World to host this event, Dallas, Texas, AT&T Stadium, 100,000 people, breaking the WrestleMania attendance record, Undertaker John Cena seemed like a lock. And for all intents, it was a lock. But John Cena was hurt. Who's healthy? Who's hot? Who's got the ability to give Undertaker one last great match on his way out? Well, that's AJ Styles. And what's great about AJ Styles is he can adapt to anybody. And so he does. Him and Undertaker, a healthy Undertaker, have a great match. And, you know, it's not Hell in a Cell. It's just a standard match. It makes people think of the CM Punk versus Undertaker match in terms of what AJ does to help Undertaker, who still, though healthy, is still 50 years old by this point, to help him through and really to give him the best possible match because Undertaker is in the business for many years, still at this point, of being the man who has the best match at WrestleMania. He, who had just shortly come off of the illustrious and absolutely phenomenal streak within the streak. He wants something on that kind of level, and he gets it with AJ Styles. And that means that the main event that year does indeed feature Roman Reigns, but it also features Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose in this scenario has actually won the Royal Rumble. He almost did in 2016. Triple H ended up winning it. And Triple H is not on this card because he was in a segment earlier in the night that we'll talk about later that was just as prominent as any match he could have had. Especially considering that in actuality, he stunk the joint out in the main event, something he has become pretty well known for doing, all due respect. So Dean Ambrose comes in white hot as a babyface. He lights the world on fire because guess what happened in the build-up to WrestleMania 32? Roman Reigns got so frustrated with the fact that Dean Ambrose won the Royal Rumble instead of him when Roman was eliminated second to last and then Triple H was thrown over. Right after that, Roman Reigns bought in like Seth Rollins had bought in. And the one remaining member of the Shield, one of the greatest factions in WWE lore, the one remaining member of the Shield who never bought into Triple H's garbage. That's Dean Ambrose, the Lunatic Fringe. He main events WrestleMania against a very, very heel Roman Reigns, who joined forces with Triple H a couple of months after getting screwed over at Survivor Series, the same as actually happened. Triple H still gets the crap beat out of him, and Roman Reigns seems like maybe, just as was the case back then in December 2015, that maybe he was finally getting to the point where he could be considered the man that the people more universally came around to loving. Because he's not John Cena. So WWE hits the reset button and decides, no, there's only one John Cena. There's only one guy we can put out there and say, all right, kids, you love him. All right, adults, you can hate him. We're okay with it. Say whatever you want because he makes great money. You guys love to hate him. People we put up against John Cena, it always works no matter who's in the driver's seat because either the kids are going to love it or the people are going to love it. It's going to make a lot of money. Merchandise is going to fly off the stands. The modern-day Hulk Hogan was an exception to the rule, but Roman's not, and we've got to give up that creative thought process because it failed. It failed creatively, and it hamstrung WWE for many, many, many years thereafter, and it never had to. So Roman Reigns joins forces with Triple H out of frustration, not because he's a greedy asshole like Seth Rollins was, but because Roman Reigns was a frustrated Samoan badass who just wanted to be the number one guy, got tired of the fans, and really pulled more of a corporate rock type thing. And because of that, then Roman Reigns eventually starts to turn the tide with his fan support, as would have, of course, happened in real life, because he would have found his voice as a heel. But the main event of WrestleMania 32, Roman Reigns challenging for the WWE title, held by Dean Ambrose, who won it in the Royal Rumble. Beats Triple H at Roadblock, by the way. Ends up losing to Roman Reigns in the main event of WrestleMania, to the dismay of so many, but amplifying the triumphant return of Seth Rollins, who takes the title from Roman Reigns and eventually loses it again to Ambrose at Money in the Bank. Same as actually happened in real life, only all the players are in better positions to succeed moving forward. People would have hated Roman Reigns so much if he'd have won at WrestleMania 32, and it would have set them up for a great creative run where Roman is the bad guy corporate champion and Ambrose eventually catches in. We get this moment. Everything sort of dovetails from there. And so then, going back real quick because I didn't want to leave this out, The Rock and Triple H, their segment earlier in the night at WrestleMania 32, it's the usual Rock banter, but it has more specific purpose because Triple H, who of course, I mean, at this point needs to be on this card, but he's Roman's backer at this point. He's got the authority, he's got their corporate champion, if you will, and he comes out during the Rock segment and he wants to get an endorsement from The Rock for Roman Reigns, his cousin. He wants it public. He's coming out there to gloat, and The Rock says no. Rock bottom, takes out Triple H, seemingly making you think it's going to be a cleaner one-on-one scenario in the main event later on. It doesn't really turn out to be that way, but it gives that segment with The Rock purpose, gives him the platform to do his usual fun shtick, but with more purpose. And then 1 year later, we move on to WrestleMania 33. Roman Reigns has been the champion for the vast majority of the past 12 months, dating back to WrestleMania 32 when he won the title. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins have co-won the 2017 Royal Rumble. Or Seth Rollins wins the Royal Rumble, and Dean Ambrose, instead of cashing in all the way back at Money in the Bank 2016, instead, that never actually happens. Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns establish their rivalry, as was the case. Ambrose follows a different path, wins Money in the Bank, and keeps it all the way up until when Seth Rollins announces that he's going to main event WrestleMania against Roman Reigns and win back the title. Ambrose comes in and says, nope, it's going to be a triple threat. And we get the Shield triple threat as the main event of WrestleMania 33. But let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about the opening match and work our way back to what should have been undeniably a WrestleMania main event this decade. The Shield triple threat. So the ladder match that takes place. New Day hosts, as was the case. I've come to accept that that's a role that WWE deems a big deal, so fair enough. I'm fine with that. But the ladder match opens as is, with the Hardy Boys coming back, doing their thing, winning the championships. All is well, I'm fine with that. Great nostalgia pop for the Hardys, one of the biggest pops of that entire year, for reasons that probably have more to do with crap booking, but nevertheless. The second match that night is The Miz defending the Intercontinental Championship against a returning Finn Balor. Finn Balor's coming back from the injury that sidelined him. You may recall he redebuted the following night on Raw. So if you don't know for sure that you've got Finn Balor ready to go, you can plan it and do The Miz does like an open challenge thing, borrowing off his disdain for some of his past rivals like John Cena, who made the open challenge quite popular. But The Miz, of course, needs to be on this card defending the Intercontinental Championship, because The Miz spent the year between WrestleMania 32 and 33 essentially reviving the reputation of the Intercontinental Championship in actuality. In this alternate reality, he is building it on the back of the success of what Kevin Owens was able to do with it, which kind of happened anyway. But Kevin Owens would have carried that success a little further if he'd not been sandwiched into a multi-man ladder match at WrestleMania that was undoubtedly thrown together at the last minute. So WrestleMania 33 has a very successful match between The Miz and Finn Balor, in which the Demon shows up and wins the championship to glorious applause in Orlando. Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt without the sperm that carried Orton to the ring, without the bugs portrayed on Wyatt's behalf all over the ring at various points in the actual WrestleMania match between these two, happens and ends up being one of those 3.25 type stars that people look back on when they rewatch WrestleManias and they say, much like Hardy versus Hardy in 2009 or DDP versus Christian in 2002, matches that you just look back on and you're like, damn, that was good. That was fun. I've forgotten how much fun that was. I forgot how good that actually was. Kane versus Angle in 2002 is another one that comes to mind. So you take that type of dynamic, and now we build to Owens versus Jericho as is. Now, in this alternate reality, Goldberg is not the Universal Champion, ladies and gentlemen. No, he is not. He is not the Universal Champion, because the Universal Champion, by way of the brand split, is Roman Reigns. So, that being said, Owens versus Jericho, though, is for the United States Championship, and it is the exact kind of match I just described that Orton and Wyatt was. It's quite a rock-solid WrestleMania match. Lesnar, he's on the card here against Braun Strowman. And Braun Strowman wins fairly decisively. Not the kind of decisive as the Goldberg win in 2016 at Survivor Series, but in the framework of a match that's very much like Lesnar versus Goldberg was at WrestleMania 33 in the real world. Lesnar versus Strowman, same kind of match, same kind of Thor versus the Hulk type thing that Roman did that year with Strowman in real and actuality. I mean, if you take that format and you give it to them, just like you had with Lesnar and Goldberg, and Braun Strowman wins, that's one of those legendary star-making moments that goes down as pretty much the biggest thing that Braun Strowman ever did. And in my opinion, in this scenario, he would go on to, very shortly after WrestleMania, win the Universal Championship, because you got to go with the guy when he's at his hottest and let him have the chance to run with the ball. So Strowman clearly should have been running with the ball in 2017, but no one ever put it in his court. Charlotte versus Bayley is my women's championship match. The SmackDown women's title doesn't make it onto this card, but Charlotte's got a pay-per-view win streak that dates back a year and a half. She's got the championship. She's coming off the best women's feud in the history of the company up to that point, back in the previous fall and summer with Sasha Banks. She couldn't be hotter at that stage in her career. No woman had ever been quite that hot and had had that many really good to great matches and performances, who'd carried the title to the level that she took it to that just was unheard of in WWE history to that point. So of course she deserves to be higher up the card. Of course she deserves to be in one of the triple main events of that show. Absolutely she does. Charlotte and Bayley is one of the marquee matches of that year's WrestleMania. Sure, maybe Bayley comes up short at the Royal Rumble the same as she actually did. But she doesn't win the title on Raw 6 weeks later, or 3 weeks later. No, she doesn't. She saves that win for when it would matter most historically. I think WrestleMania has lost sight of history-making moments that don't happen between people who peaked 20 years ago and people who, let the legendary moments have equal footing with the legendary moments of the past by giving them the chance to be equally as legendary. Bayley beat Charlotte for the title at WrestleMania. That's the thing everyone always remembers about her career. If they have a really good match in the process, even better. Come on, this is simple stuff. Charlotte versus Bayley that year was a no-brainer for WrestleMania. Bayley building her momentum, Bayley building confidence, running a scenario similar to the one that led to her NXT Championship victory at TakeOver Brooklyn originally. Come on, this is not rocket science. This is booking 101, people. Let's do this. All right, so here's a trope from WrestleMania's past that I also want to bring to the forefront right now. Giving the hottest act the opportunity to be in one of the biggest matches at WrestleMania, bar none. That is what you do. CM Punk, one of the hottest acts in the game in 2011. This is not something I'm talking about from the distant past that's been exemplified. CM Punk got super, super hot. What happens? You put him against Jericho for the WWE title at WrestleMania 28. Even though you've got these matches between legendary figures on the card as well, CM Punk versus Chris Jericho doesn't feel out of place as a main event. It doesn't feel like a third main event because CM Punk is so hot. So, why not do the same thing with AJ Styles in 2017? Why is he in the opening match in actuality against Shane McMahon? As great as that match is, AJ Styles was the hottest act in the game that entire year. So what do you do at WrestleMania with AJ Styles? You do the exact same thing you did with him at the Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble match was the match of the year, according to most. The Royal Rumble match was incredible. As I said last week on the show, I mean, you rewind the clock even 5 years, there's no question that just ends up being the main event of WrestleMania. If they're going to go with John Cena defeating one of his greatest in-ring rivals, someone who had pushed him in kayfabe past the limits that other rivals had been able to push him, I mean, at least in terms of what John Cena was pressured to do and accomplish with his moveset and in the ring to vary his game to the extent that AJ made him vary it. I mean, that was different. So you take that into account, there's no question in my mind, AJ versus Cena with Cena winning number 16 just ends up being one of the featured matches at WrestleMania, if not main event. I mean, and the debate would have been the whole time, do you close the show with Styles Cena if Cena wins number 16, or do you close the show with Ambrose finally winning the championship back from Roman Reigns? Personally, Shield Triple Threat's just a generational thing, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take three guys who had already had enormous success by this point, Ambrose more so in their class now that he has done what he's done. At the point, in actuality, Seth Rollins sort of lapped them. Roman Reigns certainly pushed harder than anyone, and Ambrose was the clear-cut third wheel. This scenario I'm running would have had Ambrose right there in the mix and in the argument legitimately for which of the Shield members had had the best singles career to that point. 3 years post the turn, essentially, you've got the three of them main eventing WrestleMania, one the champ, one the Royal Rumble winner, and one Mr. Money in the Bank. Writes itself, it's perfect, would have been amazing, would have been, in my opinion, I confidently say, the Shield Triple Threat would have been remembered as one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time, or one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time, and hopefully what would have had the opportunity to at least have been one of the best WrestleManias ever. That's one of the things I miss about WrestleMania, is I have long wanted to see things like we've seen this past year with Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan. That was a golden opportunity for them to produce a match no one will ever forget. How often does that happen for these contemporary stars? To be able to produce matches on the backs of great feuds with great creative that people are just itching to see maximize themselves on that particular stage. Actually getting the chance to do that. So now we move on to WrestleMania 34 in 2018. You're getting the gist of what I'm hoping to accomplish here. WrestleManias that have a little bit more meaning behind them from the substance of what's happening leading up to them. That's giving the younger generation, the contemporary generation, considering Styles is no spring chicken, giving them an opportunity to have legendary matches and moments, still beefing them up, backing them up with legendary figures, with legends in the business. Whether that be The Rock making a special appearance, whether that be using Brock Lesnar in a role, John Cena's 16th championship win potentially, the Shield Triple Threat. I mean, all these matches they're huge if they are handled correctly in the years leading up to them. That could have a few years prior easily carried a WrestleMania, but in this era of the WWE Network, where you're enticing people to get a free month, not spend $70 for an HD presentation. I mean, come on. You can do these matches, and it still live up to the heralded name of WrestleMania, not just in the bigness of WrestleMania and filling a football stadium, but in the quality of what happens on that night. Because not only should WrestleMania be the biggest event of the year, but it should at least have an opportunity to put itself in the class of best wrestling show, most memorable wrestling show, like it did for so many, many years and has gotten completely away from. So we'll pick up the pace so as not to keep you here all night. So you've got now, you've got at WrestleMania 34, you've got a situation where there's some big stars now. You know, you've put AJ Styles in matches with John Cena and The Undertaker. You've put Roman Reigns in situations to be very, very successful. And at this point, he still is very, very successful. The tide hasn't turned for him yet, but he's getting there. So that year, we open up with Seth Rollins versus The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. And if you gave them 15 minutes, like the actual triple threat that took place got, if you give them the same match they had 1 month later at Backlash, then The Miz versus Seth Rollins goes down as an all-time great Intercontinental Championship match, period. I personally already feel it's the best Intercontinental Championship match of this century. If you add WrestleMania to that, what is it then? It's one of the best matches ever. Braun Strowman would win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal because at this point, Braun Strowman's career has peaked. 2017 was his peak. And now we're going to figure out what this guy's really got. But we're going to keep him in the spotlight by having him win the Andre. Nia versus Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's Championship is absolutely going to stay on this card because it was a very good example of what both brought to the table. And Alexa Bliss deserved her WrestleMania moment, and she got it. It's just lower down the card. 2017, one of its things that it actually accomplished, it was the year of the tag team wrestling revival in WWE proper. That gets rewarded. It's the New Day versus the Usos, 2 out of 3 falls. And not one of those silly booking type 2 out of 3 falls matches that all 3 falls take place in like 9 minutes. This is going to be a 17-minute match. It's going to showcase tag team wrestling the way it deserves to be showcased. Because why? Because the New Day versus the Usos is pretty much the biggest tag team feud since the TLC era. It has already done incredible things for the perception of the genre in WWE proper in the prior 12 months. The New Day is still one of the most popular acts in the game and still hasn't really had the chance to shine at WrestleMania in the ring. They get the chance against their generational rivals, the Usos, and it's great. And we remember it. We remember it as the all-time best tag team title match that didn't involve a ladder in WrestleMania history. Ronda Rousey still has a match against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon in this scenario, but instead of a washed-up, decrepit Kurt Angle, who would go on to offer diddly squat in the ring or otherwise for the remainder of his in-ring career, God bless the man, he just didn't have anything left to give us by the time he came back. Great, great scenario to put him in the Hall of Fame. But they didn't need to have that guy wrestle. Who do you have benefit from Ronda Rousey's name? Who do you have benefit from that? Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens has earned a step up the WrestleMania ladder. Remember, first year, great Intercontinental Championship match. That's KO Mania 1. WrestleMania 33 at KO Mania 2. He's got the Jericho match as is. WrestleMania 34, he gets to mix it up with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon and Ronda Rousey. Same match, same presentation. Owens gets his big spots in, it's Ronda's spotlight, but KO gets the shine. And people remember that because he was involved. Brock Lesnar, his big contribution to WrestleMania 34 isn't the main event, and you might be surprised because I'm going to feature part-timers pretty prominently in this scenario. Instead, Brock Lesnar faces a returning Daniel Bryan. But Doc, everybody's going to be talking about how Daniel Bryan, he's coming back from the thing, and Brock Lesnar is so dangerous. Have you ever heard anybody talk about how Brock Lesnar is so safe? Have you ever paid attention when everyone says that? You know, they don't talk about how dangerous he is. It looks great, you know, but basically all you're doing is taking back bumps. You know, Daniel Bryan has the same match at WrestleMania that he ends up having at Survivor Series, only didn't turn heel 3 weeks prior, and people are absolutely going nuts for the fact that he's back in this huge match against the guy he always wanted to face, that he designed a new wrestling style around the possibility of facing. Daniel Bryan came back from a miraculous comeback neurologically to be able to be in this position. He's not getting in the ring with Shane McMahon and against the Stooges who'd been fighting with Shane McMahon for 9 months. He's getting in the ring with Brock freaking Lesnar, and people would have lost their shit to see that. In that moment, fight me. Asuka versus Charlotte as is, no question. Just more build-up, and it's higher up the card. Roman Reigns defends the Universal Championship against the Demon Finn Balor, who never got his rematch until then. At any point. Wins the Elimination Chamber or something, does Finn Balor. And then gets the match with Reigns. Maybe even wins. I don't know. AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura. It does happen. Nakamura, though, turns heel immediately after winning the Royal Rumble. When AJ Styles is called out, maybe the next night on the next whatever on SmackDown, they run the same angle that they did at WrestleMania, but they do it right after the Royal Rumble. They build to the match, and it becomes far better for it because there's actually something there besides these guys had a match in Japan a couple of years prior. You should watch it. Undertaker John Cena is the main event. John Cena can still do it. Undertaker can still do it. This is a match everyone had wanted to see. And in my scenario, part-timers haven't dominated this product. In my scenario, part-timers have been boosting the current generation of stars, and WWE's been more conscious of building that current generation. So when this show takes place, Undertaker John Cena isn't viewed as something that, you know, it's viewed as Undertaker's opportunity to go out, to retire, because he's earned it. You know what I mean? In a building in which the streak within the streak and the streak was over, John Cena Undertaker finally takes place. Proper build, Undertaker's around, it's billed as Taker's final match, announced ahead of time, 2 months in advance, Undertaker's having his last match. Who's going to face the Undertaker? A couple of weeks worth of asking that question, John Cena shows up, says it's got to be me, Taker says I'm going to, you know, whatever, rest in peace, boom. And because there's not that jadedness about part-timers, this being the main event, no one bats a blanking eyelash about it because people want to see this match, and they've not been beaten over the head with part-timers for the years leading up to it.
And then we come to 2019, so WrestleMania 35, the one we've just come off of, that had some real successes. I mean, this is probably, this year's was the most critically acclaimed WrestleMania that we've had in a while, and not critically acclaimed on the level that WrestleMania 31 or 30 were, but critically acclaimed in the sense that a lot of the right people won. You had the women's main event, although that part wasn't so acclaimed. The Kofi Kingston aspect of it is really what I think translates to this being a really memorable one. But it could have been done a lot better, I think. I don't think there's any question about that. And in part, that comes from the rest of what we've talked about on the pod today, looking at WrestleMania as something that's respectably quite shorter, looking at something that isn't trying to get everybody on the card, that's spent many years leading up to this one, forcing good habits into the fold rather than trying to force poorer habits that go against the grain of what the audience really wants into the fold. So let's start with the opener. The opener is going to be Charlotte and Asuka 2. Charlotte's removed from the women's main event because, as history proved, she really didn't belong there in the first place. Did she belong there in the sense that she was the top female leading up to the time when Becky got hot, and that she had a name, that she had a lot of success? There's no question about it. Charlotte had tons of success. She deserved to be in the mix during the first ever women's WrestleMania main event. But that's not what the people wanted by that point. That time had come and gone. She'd been replaced. Becky beat her out. It's that simple. That's what we need to get back to with WrestleMania. It's just, you know what? I mean, Shawn Michaels was hot. He really truly was. Shawn Michaels was hot, so you went with the hot hand because of DX in 1998. Steve Austin was hotter, so you went with him. You didn't need to force anyone else into the mix. You didn't need to try to make it work with Mick Foley, despite how over he was, despite the Dude Love success and the three faces of Foley. The argument back then was you should consider putting Foley in that spot. Conventional wisdom ran out because, quite frankly, as good as he would have been in that spot, that's not what people wanted. People wanted to see Alpha versus Alpha, and that's what Ronda and Becky was. But Charlotte versus Asuka, too, was really ready and waiting for them to do if they wanted it, and they just decided not to. But it would have been a great opener because, quite frankly, you know, we're talking about a hugely successful match the previous year. Successful in the sense that it really, despite having virtually no build-up, it connected on a level where people wanted to see the Alpha from NXT versus the Alpha from WWE. And though they never really went quite so far as to say that's what it was, this time around you've got the story inherently built in of Asuka wanting to try to get her win back. Same sort of deal where she's coming in trying to dethrone the queen. Would have worked. The four-way tag team match as is what would follow it. Instead of Baron Corbin, who's got a limited ceiling in what he can achieve in the modern wrestling world, retiring Kurt Angle, I think Kurt Angle, he has some value in the role he played. A quick match, gets the old entrance,
goes through the highlight reel, never really wrestled before up to this point. You extract him from the Shield situation. You extract him from the mixed tag the year prior. It's literally Kurt Angle's first opportunity to wrestle, and you put him against an opponent who can carry him, and that's Drew McIntyre, who has a lot to gain as a modern monster heel, because Drew McIntyre looks like $1 trillion compared to his peers in WWE today. There aren't many Drew McIntyres left, and the fact that he's an incredible worker and that he's got a lot of inherent natural attitude, give him a manager. Do whatever you got to do if you want to get him over in a bigger way, but if you want him to get over, put him over Kurt Angle in a world in which part-timers aren't so prominently used. Have him retire Kurt Angle in Kurt Angle's advertised retirement match, just as is, just switching around the players. Roman Reigns would then destroy Baron Corbin instead of facing Drew McIntyre. And I'm talking about total and utter annihilation. Roman Reigns comes back. People are hot for him. They're happy to see him. They're appreciative of his efforts to beat leukemia. And Baron Corbin's one of the most hated villains in the game. People want him to be destroyed. Let Roman Reigns destroy him. You're not going to get heat on Baron Corbin any hotter than he had in late 2018. You're just not, because people want this guy to be destroyed and swept under the rug. That's what they wanted. Roman Reigns doing that would have been very fitting. Kevin Owens gets the Brock Lesnar spot. Kevin Owens faces Brock Lesnar in a non-title match. None of these matches with Lesnar over the years have been championship matches on these WrestleManias, because they never needed to be. Brock Lesnar is not a number one star. He is a special attraction. Putting the championship on a special attraction never has made sense, except for the very brief period when it worked the first go-round. We're eliminating the sequels to that whole episode in 2014 and 15 from the record. Kevin Owens gets his dream match against Brock Lesnar. Maybe Owens goes over Lesnar. I certainly would have loved to see that, but that would have been one of the things that I would have maintained from this year's WrestleMania, putting over a current modern generation star with some momentum behind him, and he did. Seth Rollins had momentum at the time that he beat him, but I think Kevin Owens would have generated it faster because there would have been a novelty to his babyface act. Then you do Bryan versus Kofi Kingston as is. Perfect. I don't know that it's the main event. I think you can't get around the fact that you had the hot women's angle. You had the hot topic of Becky having earned the right to be the man. And I think the man gets the WrestleMania spot, and in a better set of circumstances gets to prove why, instead of kind of sort of flopping in that spot like she did. Bryan versus Kofi, though, not a flop at all. As is, on this card, it's still one of the best things that's happened in modern WrestleMania lore. I would have the Demon Balor win the Intercontinental title, as is. I would then do, instead of Rollins versus Lesnar for the Universal Championship, Rollins still wins the Rumble, but AJ Styles has been around to become the Universal Champion. And because of that dynamic, you have Rollins and Styles in a spot they're very, very well suited for. It's a dream match in some eyes. Rollins is always going to have his critics, especially right now. But I think history is going to look back on him very fondly for this era. He's going to be looked at as, instead of an example of what was wrong with it, one of the shining lights that was still right with it. Becky versus Ronda is then the main event. It's that simple. Becky earned it. Ronda earned it. Ronda's got the name. She's got that value to her. That's sort of what WrestleMania has always been built on, is the extra flair that you get. And in this case, flair being pun intended, she's extracted from the situation, and the real flair that led to people wanting to see Becky versus Ronda more than anything else during that time period leading up to, of course, Kofi Mania, which sort of took it by storm, but that was the last 6 weeks. WrestleMania season ended up being defined by Kofi. WrestleMania season would have just as easily been defined by Becky versus Ronda had it been allowed to play out the way people wanted to see it. So, ladies and gentlemen, that'll do it for me today. Pleasure to have you join me for an hour this week. This is a fun topic for me. WrestleMania, I've got a huge passion for, even if that passion's dwindling now and is really rooted more so in what happened before. In the past, I think WrestleMania can very easily, with a few minor tweaks, be everything that it used to be. These cards that I created were examples of what
WWE has a proven track record of doing already. I'm not asking them to change anything drastic in their formula. I'm asking them to simply do what always worked before. And you get the same amount of money, you get the same amount of big mainstream credit for the most part. You get a whole lot of goodwill earned from wrestling fans who just want to love wrestling, though, too. And that's, there's something to be said for treating your most ardent supporters well. So, enjoy the next week. We'll be back next week with a good conversation to come with my old buddy Shane, the LOP Mystic, formerly of all sorts of LOP radio shows and a longtime excellent columnist at lordsofpain.net, one of your more existential thinkers about pro wrestling. That's going to be a very philosophic conversation, I would imagine. So until then, thank you again for joining me this week, and I'll catch you next time here on The Doc Says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era.